It's time once again for another edition of Getting to Know You on VIP Conduit. This month, we welcome Cheryl Spencer from Jacksonville, Florida. Here is our host for tonight's presentation, Susie B.
Welcome everyone to tonight's edition to Getting to Know You. Tonight, I have the pleasure of having Cheryl Spencer as my guest from Jacksonville, Florida. And hello, Cheryl.
Hey, Susie. Thanks for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be here.
We're going to start with our basic questions. Where were you born?
I was born in Fort Hood, Texas, in December 12th. And I was born with birth defects to my fingers and toes. And I was born with a cleft palate. The doctor told my mother that I would need 24-hour care. I was the youngest of five, so she said, that's not happening. But luckily, God intervened, and I slept 20 out of the 24 hours. So that gave my mom a much-needed break with the other siblings that I had.
So they kept you, right?
Yep, they did. Bless their hearts.
All right. Well, with that kind of start, I guess there were a number of surgeries that were on the horizon, and some of them very quickly. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. At the age of 3 months, I had the cleft palate repaired, and I had to go in the hospital for about 6 weeks. And during that time, my parents were not allowed to visit me at all. I mean, I don't know. I think back then, that was the Army way. And my mom says that when she went to get me, that the nurse walks right by her with me and she didn't even recognize me. And the doctor said, because, you know, cleft palates are very, can cause people to have speech impairments. And they said that I would probably not be able to speak very well. So I guess I proved them wrong, I hope.
I think so. Well, that being that, when did you start talking? I'm sure they told you.
Well, I was the youngest of five, so I had four older brothers and sisters to kind of be a role model. So I guess I just started yabbering along with the rest of them. And I remember them telling me stories about when I did go to the doctor when I was about three, that they were amazed how well I could talk.
Well, with that many brothers and sisters, you actually had your own cheering section. And when you have your own cheering section, you don't have any choice except to show out. I know your dad was in the Army, so you, growing up, you were in a lot of different places. Now, I think, how old were you when you all moved to, was it Puerto Rico, that something else happened?
Yeah, I was 4 years old when we moved to Puerto Rico, and during that time, I was having a difficult time with the other kids because, you know, when you're born different and you have birth defects, people are kind of afraid and they kind of make fun of you. And I was having a hard time with that. My mom took me aside and said, well, you know, they're just curious. If you just show them and tell them that you were born that way and there's nothing you can do, you know, that God made you that way, that they're just curious. And I did that. And she was correct. And once that was out of the way, they treated me just like everybody else, which was really great. But at the age of five, I had a surgery on my hand that separated my thumb from my forefinger on my left hand so that I could write. That was the only surgery I had in Puerto Rico. We were there for about 3 years.
Now, there's something about swimming and something that occurred from that. Was that not in Puerto Rico?
Well, I learned to swim when I was in Puerto Rico. A lifeguard named JJ, I still remember him to this day. This is how he taught me to swim. He just threw me in the pool. That was it. And it was sink or swim for me, but I loved it. And I would swim and get in the water every chance I get. However, the result of that was developing multiple ear infections. And I had to get tubes put in my ear. And the doctor said, no more water. You can't get water in your ear. You're going to get another infection. Well, at that age, who listens? And I didn't. So I paid the price ultimately.
Okay, we're going to jump ahead a little bit because of the ear situation, and then we're coming back. But the ear problem didn't go away, did it? Tubes didn't do all the magic.
No, every time I got water in my ear, I got an ear infection, and the ear infection resulted in a surgery. Well, the ear infection was in the mastoid of the ear, which is the cavity behind your ear. And if you let it go too long, it can get really serious. And I did let it go too long on my right side, or the infection was so bad on my right side that it caused nerve damage, and I am totally deaf on my right ear. I've had like a total of 7 ear operations.
Now, have you ever had the cochlear implant? I'm probably not saying that right, but I'm sure you know what I'm saying.
It was much, much, much later in life when I got a version of the cochlear called the Baha implanted. I was, 2006 when I got that done.
Well, let's back up. You're 4 years old. So far, you've had problems. You've had surgery for the cleft palate. You've had some surgery done on your hand and tubes in your ears. Where were you when you start? Did you go to preschool or kindergarten? And if so, where?
I started school. I mean, nothing wrong with my eyes, so I was fully sighted. I started school in second grade. First and second grade in Puerto Rico, and I was in the middle of my third grade when my dad's mom became very ill, and we were called back stateside to attend her funeral. Then my dad was transferred and stationed in Fort Knox, Kentucky. So I went into third grade, finished up there in Fort Knox, Kentucky. When I went there, I can remember the third grade teacher say, well, what reading group were you in? And she looked at me and she said, probably the third group, right? And I didn't know group. And it's like, I'd never heard that before. I said, probably, I don't know. So it wasn't long before I was moved from the third group to the first group. And that was when I realized that, okay, they're going to look at me and they're going to make certain assumptions. So I have to prove that I'm just like anybody else. So that's where that started.
How did you interact with other kids at that point? Obviously, the teacher was the one with the problem there. Did you have pretty good rapport with the other kids?
Most of them I did. There was the odd, the few that were afraid and, would treat me differently, but for the most part, I was well accepted in school.
Okay, let's go on through elementary school. Can you think of anything in elementary school? And we're talking up to, what I call elementary school, up to eighth grade. Can you think of anything outstanding that occurred during that period? Did you have a favorite subject other than recess and lunch?
Well, nothing really stands out. I was just a typical kid. I loved to play outside. I enjoyed school. I was an average student. I wasn't above average or anything like that. I was like, had an even keel with my classmates. had the usual friends and did the usual stuff. I don't remember anything really standing out. I know that I had developed a friendship with one girl. Her name was Charlene. She's still my friend to this day. So we've been friends since the age of 9. So that's pretty cool to have a lifelong friend, especially when your dad's in the Army and you're moving around a lot.
Absolutely. All right, high school. Where did you go to high school? And tell me about high school. Were you involved in sports, music, other extracurricular activities?
Well, in the middle of my 7th grade, my dad retired. We moved to Weaver, Alabama, and I went to Sachs High School in Anniston, Alabama. And I enjoyed running track. I was very, very active outdoors, and I was on the volleyball team at some point during that. And I kind of hung out with the cool kids. I was kind of the class clown, and, you know, I seemed to be pretty well liked after the ice was broken. It's always tough to be the new kid on the block.
Exactly. Well, how did you like living down south?
Well, to be honest with you, I had grown up in the military, and we went to, when I went to school, it was, you know, back in the early 70s, and the school that I went to was all white. I'm like, it was just odd to me, because when I grew up in school, we had kids of all races that we interacted with, so I just thought that was really odd.
What about high school, starting in 9th? Any big things happening there?
In the 9th grade, I had science class, and I was the class clown. I was joking around. For one reason or another, I didn't do my homework one night. And sitting in class, and the teacher comes around, it's like, I didn't do my homework. He said, well, you have a choice. You can write a 10-page essay, or you can get 3 licks. Well, if I couldn't finish my homework, I'm not going to. I chose the licks. Well, by lunchtime, word had gotten out that happened. And my brother was also in the school. My older brother was also there. And so, yeah. So I got 3 licks. And then when I got home, I got my mom. Yeah, I got in trouble twice.
I understand that happens usually. If you get a spanking at school, you're going to get one when you get home. What sort of hurdles did you experience in high school? I think that probably was maybe your junior or senior year.
Well, when I was in, I think I was a sophomore in school, I had, my eyes were inflamed. And so we went to the eye doctor, and the doctor said, oh, I think her tear ducts are blocked. The way it looks like, I think her tear ducts are blocked. So he referred me to a doctor in Birmingham, Alabama, at the Eye Foundation Hospital, Dr. Callahan. And so we went there, and Dr. Callahan just gave me a cursory glance. Based on the notes that the doctor had sent him, scheduled me for surgery to have the Jones tubes put in the corner of my eye to service tear ducts. So that's the beginning of the eye problem.
Well, just run with it. Tell us about it.
Okay, so the night before this first surgery, that's having an eye examination, and the eye doctor's looking at me as a resident. He goes, well, there's nothing wrong with your eyes. And I said, thank God for that, because the operation was for the tear ducts. It had nothing to do with my eyes at all. So had the surgery, and about a week later, I was looking in the mirror, and I could see this round cylinder in the corner of my right eye. And I said, what is that? It turned out that the tube that they placed in the corner of the eye started to protrude and it started to irritate the eyelid. And we made multiple trips back to Birmingham for them to put that tube back in place, and that was not real fun, let's just say that. As time went on, the tube started irritating the eye more and more and more. And the eyelids started to, my eyes started being very sensitive to light, to the point where I started squeezing my eyelids together to get away from the light. And eventually the eyelids started to overdevelop and turn in toward the cornea of my eye and rub the sight away. And they became ulcerated. And ultimately the right eye ended up perforating. And I went through a lot of, at one point in time, they called it photophobia, fear of light. At one point in time, they had to put me to sleep 4 times in 2 weeks just to examine the eyes. The doctor said that the eyelids were so strong that it was equivalent to a man lifting weights. They could not open my eyes unless they put me to sleep. So that was, yeah. Those 2 years that I spent with that condition, my poor family and me both. I mean, I stayed up at night, slept during the day, just, you know, so I wouldn't have to deal with the light. But I couldn't stand the light of day. So it was a very tumultuous time of my life. After putting contact lenses in my eyes to protect the cornea, the eyes were actually dry, and by this time they had removed the tubes that were the initial cause, because it turned out I didn't have blocked tear ducts after all. So they removed the tubes, and the doctor said, I'm going to refer you to a specialist in Gainesville, Florida. And that's where Dr. Pollack came in. So we spent, I think, once a week for, oh my gosh, it was a bit of time. We went from Alabama to Gainesville, Florida, which is about 450 miles each way, to see the eye doctor. The first time I went there, the doctor took one look at me. He took the ring out of the eye, that there was some kind of ring in there, and he took it out and flung it across the room, and he was like not a happy camper. I had emergency surgery that night, and the eye had perforated, so I had essentially lost my right eye. So, but I had still had light perception in the left eye. So by this time, I could still see some, but because of the photophobia, I couldn't open my eyes to utilize what sight I had. So by the time that it was all said and done, I had approximately 40 eye surgeries. And then it was between the 72 and 74. I think that was the time.
Are you one of the ones that say that you hate needles?
Yes. Well, back then, and when I had the ear operations, they would give you this prep shot, and it would be in the thigh, and it would make me really, really sick. And, oh, yeah, I would get so nervous more for the IV and the shot than I would be for the surgery. So, yeah, I'm a terrible needle phobic to this day.
Well, I don't think there's, I can't imagine you not being that many surgeries during that length of time and all those procedures. All right. At this point, you're what? A sophomore in high school and probably hadn't been in a while because of all of this. Did your school, or had you just quit going to school? And if so, what happened to change your mind?
Well, I had made it through my sophomore year, and a lot of this happened during that year, I kept going to school because, like I said, I still had sight and I could still see, but I was having trouble with the light. So it got progressively worse into my junior year, to the point where I would go to school and my brother would actually have to guide me to the door because the light was so bad I couldn't stand it. So, but I ended up having to quit after Thanksgiving holiday because it was just too tough on my parents trying to help me keep up with my homework and me, the stress of going to school.
So what did you do during this time? Or after that, what did you do?
Fell into a deep hole, depression, you know, because you become isolated. It's a very dark place to be. You feel helpless and angry, and it's a really tough time. But one day, I was listening to some records. Really, my dad was into George Jones, so I listened to a lot of George Jones, Sonny James. I was real big in the classic country. Well, they had this one album because they were a member of the Columbia Book Album Record Club. So one album was called Tom Jones Live at the Flamingo Hotel. So I thought, okay, I like Tom Jones. I think he's pretty cool. So I put that on my little portable record player. I was playing it and just, you know, listening. And he started singing this song, I'm Never Gonna Fall in Love Again. And I can still remember, wow, you know, the voice just reached out to me. It's like, it's hard to explain, but it was like I became a part of his voice and his voice became a part of me. And it allowed me to release all the pent-up frustrations and anger and escape from the pain. So that's how and why Sir Tom Jones is so important to me.
That song made a big turnaround for you. Now, what about the concert? Was it your sister that found out that he was going to be in concert somewhere?
Yeah, this was, let's see, 72. But anyway, in 76, I had, there's a lot that happened between that and that first concert, including me getting my sight back. Did you want to talk about that first?
Yes, please. Because that's where they came up with a new procedure, right?
Yeah, so I had quit school, and then the summer of 74, I went to visit my sister. She was pregnant, so I went to spend the summer with her. And during that time, my brother-in-law had a little heart-to-heart with me. He said, look, he said, what are you going to do with your life? And I didn't know what he was talking about. And he said, you can't wait until you get your sight back. What if it doesn't happen? What are you going to do? You can't just put your life on hold wondering, you know, what are you going to do? So have you thought about going back to school? I said, I can't go to school. Well, my brother-in-law and sister had been volunteers at the Kentucky School for the Blind. So they had been around blind kids, and I never have. So he was talking to me about going back to school for the blind. And so after my nephew was born and I flew back to Alabama with my mom, we looked into going to the Alabama School for the Blind in Talladega. And after Thanksgiving, which is basically when I quit, I started back into school right where I left off at the School for the Blind and took Braille, mobility, and later on typing, which were the three most important things that I carry with me today. But I think that was my brother-in-law. That was the best thing he could have ever done, is to nudge me in that direction.
Now, at the School for the Blind, what was your reaction? All of a sudden, here you are with all these people that have similar problems as you. How did that feel?
Well, I have been isolated for 2 years, and I felt like, just invisible. So to all of a sudden be surrounded by people and activity and everything, it took me a while to acclimate to that kind of environment. The roommate that I had, Janice, she really helped me to get out of my shell, so to speak. But it did. It took a while for that to happen, for me to reacclimate into interacting with other people.
Well, it took a while for that to happen, but after you got acclimated, did you feel like you were playing on an even field all of a sudden?
I was very grateful to have the opportunity to go back to school and to graduate, because when I was in high school, I was kind of like not serious about the education, but when I went back to school, I realized the importance of what an education could be, and I really knuckled down and studied and ultimately graduated second in my class. Well, there was only 9, but hey, I thought that was pretty good. And I'm very grateful. In my senior year, Miss Nancy Williams, she was the typing teacher. She sat down with me and was going to help me learn to type. So she took me and showed me what keys that I could type with the way my hands were. And without that, oh my gosh, and to this day, I can type around 60 words a minute. And I've been typing at my job for a long, long time. So thank you, Ms. Williams.
When you graduated from high school, what was the next step? I don't think it was going home and just sitting around, but I don't know. We didn't talk about this.
Well, between my junior and senior year, during that summer before I turned to a senior, a doctor had called my parents and said, I think I have a procedure that will help Cheryl get her sight back. So we were all excited about that, made the trip down to Gainesville, ready to have this sight-restoring surgery. I'm psyched up. So the night before surgery, I'm sitting there. The resident is going over the surgery, wants me to sign the consent form, and he's explaining the surgery to me. He said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to suture your eye closed. Then we're going to implant this telescopic device through the middle of your eyelid. And I was horrified. I said, oh, no, you're not. And he's like, what? I said, you're not doing that to me. And so he was like, oh, no, what have I done? So he's in a panic and I'm in a panic. So I go back to my room. I call my parents. I'm not going to have this surgery. It's horrible. And he calls the doctor and he says, oh, my God, she's not going to sign the paper. She doesn't want to have the surgery. So Dr. Follett comes at 11 o'clock at night, the night before the surgery. He's coming up to the hospital. He's like, okay, what's going on? And I said, I don't like the thought of the whole thing. So we go back and forth and back and forth. Finally, he gets mad. He says, okay, if you're so adapted to your braille and your cane, fine. So he starts to walk out of the room. And I said, wait a minute. So he comes back and he sits on the side of the bed. And I said, explain it to me again. So he took the pen out of his shirt pocket and he showed it to me. He said, the telescope is no bigger than the end of this pen. He said, it's going to lie in the middle of your eye. Yes, we have to close your eye because your eyes are dry and they're prone to infection. It's the only way we can do this. But you won't be able to notice it that much unless you're looking directly at you. The way he described it, it sounded not bad. I said, okay, I'll do it. So the next day, we had the surgery. And after the surgery, they took the bandage off. I still couldn't see. Turned out that there was a membrane behind the lens that was obscuring my vision. So he had my parents go home, had me stay in the hospital for 2 more weeks while he waited to see if the membrane would shrink. Well, it did a tiny bit, but not enough to give me usable vision. So I started my senior year with the telescope in place, and I could see out of the corner of the telescope. I knew the vision was there, but I couldn't really use it. But it was kind of cool.
Okay, so this little bit of teeny vision, did it help you any in, well, maybe looking out the side of your eye and seeing a door facing or the shoe mold so you could kind of follow it? Or did it do anything?
Not really. I mean, I couldn't stay focused on it. I mean, I get the occasional glimpse, but that was it. So basically, went through my senior year as a blind person the way I did the previous year, graduated. I was a bicentennial graduate in 1976, had a great, I hated to see the end of high school. I really enjoyed my time there. And during that summer, a friend of mine had invited me that I knew from public school, had invited me to go out to the lake for swimming. So I went with her and had a great time. About 3 days later, I started having severe pain in the eye where the telescope was. And I started getting very, very sick to the point where I just couldn't stand it. So called the doctor, and they had to take me to Gainesville. And let me tell you, that was a rough ride. I was downing aspirin trying to stave off the pain because every little bump hurt. So by the time we got to Gainesville, when I take aspirin, it tends to dull my hearing. So by the time we got to Gainesville, I couldn't hear a thing. And they're like yelling at me to let me know what's going on. And I had emergency surgery that night after we got to the hospital. And I can remember after the surgery, not being in any pain after 3 days. It was like, wow, I felt like I was floating. It was such a relief. So the next morning, I went to the examining room, and they took off the bandage, and I had instant sight. All the colors and lights and details were flooding into my brain. It's like, wow, it was amazing. So, and then they had to cover it up, and I'm like, no, don't. Anyway, I went back to my room, and when my parents had gotten there that morning, they were asking me about the examining, and I was trying to pretend like, oh, it didn't work, and I said, I can see. It was a great moment.
Okay, how long did this vision last?
I had it for about 13 months. During the time I had the vision, I started drawing and found out that I had quite a talent for drawing portraits and things like that. That was what I like to do most, is draw pictures, because I was quite into photography before I lost my sight. So I like to take pictures and things like that. I got a movie camera, did all kinds of stuff like that. I just couldn't look at enough. So I think March of the next year, we get a phone call from my sister. And she goes, Tom Jones is going to be in Dallas. And she was living in Dallas at the time. And my parents had loaded me up with my nephew Scott and drove me to Dallas, Texas to go to that concert. And that was amazing in and of itself. I can remember being in the audience and Tom Jones coming on stage, and I was like, oh my God, it's really him. Oh my God. And wow. And my sister during the show, she says, "Would you like to meet him?" And I said, "No." I was so afraid that I would be disappointed in him, you know, after building him up for so many years. But after the concert was over, we were leaving, and one of the people that was with us had left their camera bag in the back in the seat. So we went back into the auditorium, and my sister said, "Is Tom Jones still here?" And they said, "Yeah, he's backstage having a shower." And she was saying, "Well, my sister just got her sight back, and she would just like to thank him for all that he had done for her throughout the years." And he said, "Okay, hold on a minute, I'll go ask." So within 5 minutes, he came back. He said, "Yeah, he'll see you." And I was like, "Oh." So totally stunned. So they had, even though I could see, they had to walk me backstage. And so I sat down in the hallway, and my sister with Becky was with me. And I remember sitting there waiting to meet him. And all of a sudden, this super calm feeling came over me. I was just as calm as could be. It's like really strange to me, but wow, what a, you know, it was amazing. So it came time for me to meet him. And we stood up, and the guy with Tom said, "You need to go with her," talking to my sister. So my sister walked me down the hall, and I can remember Tom standing inside the room, and he looked like, "Oh my God, what is she going to do? Is she going to attack me, jump on me? What is she? He was braced. So I just walked in, I smiled and shook his hand and told him how much I liked this show, and he visibly relaxed at that moment. And we had a very pleasant conversation. I told him about having gotten my sight back in the telescope, and he looked at the telescope, and it was like, wow, he was fascinated. And then my sister said, Cheryl wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you, Tom. And he looked like somebody had punched him in the stomach. It was like, wow, I didn't know my music could have that kind of impact or anything on anybody. So I said, "Yep, you got me through a lot of really hard times. So thank you." So I was able to thank him in person, and he autographed the picture, and I didn't even have a camera with me. I don't think I had any film left, but I still remember that time. And I asked him if I could see him again. He said, "Sure, anytime you see my name, you come and say hello." And so I have. But the next time I got to meet him was 2 years later after I lost my sight. And then he remembered me and allowed me to braille his face. It was pretty cool. So I've had some really incredible times with Tom Jones.
Okay, let's move on from Tom. Of course, Tom is still in your life. But I think what sort of work did you do? I know that you did get a job and you took some training for us. Tell us a little bit about that. What was that job?
Well, after I graduated, I went to my counselor in Anniston, Alabama, and my mobility instructor had worked in Miami, and he had known of some people that did darkroom work, and it was something that I could do whether I could see or not, because this telescope thing wasn't a sure thing. So even though I could see, I wanted a job that I could do whether I could see or not. So that was my mindset at the time. The only darkroom school that was around at the time was here in Jacksonville, Florida. So they signed me up. I was accepted to the school, came down, did the training for a year, did an on-the-job training at another hospital for 6 months, and landed a job as a darkroom tech in a hospital here in Jacksonville. That hospital is no longer there. But I worked there for 8 years until I was laid off in 1987. And during that time, I got my first Apple IIe computer and learned to. I was president of the Tom Jones fan club. He keeps coming up, but he's just prevalent in my life. And after I lost my job, I could no longer afford the apartment I had. And I had gone and gotten a guide dog in 79, leader dogs. And my angel Tammy was always by my side. And so when I lost my job, I had to get another apartment downtown that I could afford. And my computer experiences took me into another realm, as you probably know, Susie.
With your computer, I think they were called bulletin boards or something, and I think through that you met Chris, correct?
Yes, I had met a programmer in Los Angeles at the Convention for the Blind, and through that, I got a program called ProWord. Larry Skukon, some of you may recognize that name, but we became friends, and he helped me out with a lot of learning. And he also wrote a program called ProTerm that back then would allow you to go online and interact with bulletin boards. And I had a 300 baud modem. So I would dial up these local bulletin boards, read the paper, play little games, and, you know, it was just great fun. So I had a friend that had learned about this other service where you could log on to a local hub and then from there dial any bulletin board in the country as long as you had the number. Well, one of the numbers that she had was to the Apple Boston connection in Boston, Massachusetts. So I signed up for that. So I got an email back from there saying, welcome to the service, the usual welcome letters. And it was signed SysOp Chris. And then that was the beginning. And when I heard his name, I kid you not, a ding. I heard a ding. And so a couple of weeks later, I was on the bulletin board and went into this conference room. It was the first multi-user conferencing software in existence at that time. And this is 1988 by this time. And Chris was in there and we struck up a conversation. And that was the beginning of our connection.
And you and Chris eventually got married and were married how many years?
We married 10 months to the day after we met on the bulletin board. He flew down to meet me. He said, I've got to know if what I'm feeling for you is real. And so he did, and it was. And then I think I met him twice more before we actually got married. So I saw him three times before we got married. He came down to Jacksonville, loaded me up in the van, went to Alabama. I got married in Anniston. My aunt gave me a storybook wedding. And we went up to Boston and lived up there until the end of that year when the project that he was working on for GTE Laboratories ended. And we were at loose ends, so we ended up back in Jack's because, man, it's cold up there in the wintertime, I'm telling you.
All right, let's jump ahead a little bit. Where you work now, how long have you been there, and essentially what do you do there?
Well, moved back here in 1990 and 92. I interviewed for a job at the reservations for a Jacksonville Transportation Authority. Back then it was called ComSys, which is basically a subcontract of the JTA City Bus Service. And when I interviewed for the job, there was no furniture in the office. It was brand new. And the guy was saying, well, why should I hire you? Well, I had gone to Daytona after I lost my job and got computer training, and I'm telling them all about this talking computer and how great it was and what I could do with it, and I'd be an asset to the, you know. And so he said, you know, a blind person had never done this before. And he said, could you read a map? And I said, no, I would not be able to read a map. And he said, you know what? We could work around that. He said, you bring your talking computer with you and we'll give you a shot. And so he started me out 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. And that was January of 92. By September, he had moved me to full time. And I'm still a reservationist 31 and a half years later. I just don't know when to quit.
Well, you thought you did until they gave you a raise. And I know you like to read. You do these tremendous promos for games. A number of us have been privy to those. I know you host a game, Pyramid, twice a month. Over on Out of Sight. No, I'm not hesitant about mentioning other sites because all of us started somewhere else. VIP didn't exist in the beginning. Is there anything you would like to add before? Okay, let me put this in here now. We've all heard about confetti, but we're not talking about confetti tonight because she's going to do her own presentation about confetti. So if you're thinking, why didn't she ask about that? That is why. So do you have anything you would like to add before folks get to ask questions? Because I think they've got about 10 or 15 more minutes.
Well, the only thing I'd like to add is after I had lost the telescope in 1980, I got another chance to get another telescope in the left eye, and it was successful, and I had that for another 13 months. I was actually a reader for the boyfriend that I had at the time. He was going to UNF, and I was his reader and got paid for being his reader for a while. And sadly, after 13 months, I had the telescope had failed and I lost it, but I had my beautiful Tammy to pick up from where she, you know, she just picked up and kind of knew when I couldn't see, and she was right there for me. So that was, so I had lost and gained my sight a total of 5 times. So that's pretty much it.
Okay, folks, this is your opportunity to ask questions. Remember, if you're keyed up and you hear somebody else talking, please let go of your key, because otherwise Cheryl won't have a chance to ask questions. And I think the powers that be will allow us to ask questions as long as you would like. So, Cheryl, before I give up my key, in case I don't get a chance, thank you so much for sharing. Cheryl with us tonight, and it's been an absolute pleasure. Folks, here's your chance.
Wow. Cheryl, what an absolutely remarkable interview, and what a really neat person you are. I have thoroughly enjoyed this and am just in awe. I've always thought you were such a neat person because you're so confident. It sounds like you're just a load of fun. I am just so happy that you did this interview, and I thank you for being the person you are, and I'm so glad that I know you.
Thank you so much, Becky, and I have come to know and love all of you as well. I think the world of everyone on VIP and Out of Sight. And Susie, it's been an honor and a privilege, like I said, to share the stage with you.
Hi, Cheryl. I sure enjoyed your interview tonight. It was so, so great. And I want to say, not only does she do all this great artwork and stuff that she mentioned, but she's very crafty too, because I have a beautiful Afghan that I bought in an auction. And it's just so pretty, and I enjoy it so much. And I'm so happy I know you, girl.
Well, I appreciate that, Janet, but I'm not the one that did that. I think that was another Cheryl, but thank you so much, and you're one of my favorite singers, girl.
Hey, Spence, it was really so enlightening to hear about your life story. It sounds like you had several fairy tales in it that really made life interesting. And thank you so much for letting us know just another little side of you. Good. We see different sides all the time, and we really like it. It's refreshing.
Thank you, Linda.
Cheryl, I just want to say it was a great interview, and you're really an asset to VIP. It's great to have you on board. And Cheryl's a kind of inspiration of getting our get-together in Springfield together. She's a go-getter. She said, let's make it happen, and she did. And her, along with Parker and his family, they've done a lot of work. And Cheryl's the one that started it all, so thanks a lot, Cheryl. And like I said, it's been a pleasure having you on the site.
It's very seldom I agree with everything Terry says, but I certainly did that time.
Thank you. Thank you, Parker and Terry.
So tell us more about the confetti program or interview you've got. When is that coming up?
I don't think that's been scheduled yet, has it, Cheryl?
It hasn't, but I can do it anytime they like, because I have actually a presentation. It was a 15-minute documentary that was done on me and confetti, and it tells the story beautifully. And that's what I use when I do a presentation.
I want to tell you about my meeting, Cheryl. Last year, she'd gone to Kentucky for, I think, her nephew's wedding and come spent a few days with her brothers in Clarksville. And she told me, she said, Susie, when I'm on my way home, I want to come by and see you. So she did. And I insisted beforehand, I said, spend the night. She had been telling us all about this, her outfit for the wedding, because the theme was Roaring Twenties. So I got to see her metallic encrusted flapper dress with the fringe on the bottom, her dancing shoes. Her dancing shoes are absolutely wonderful. I can understand why you could dance in those. Even the little fur coat and the jewelry, the whole thing. I got to see the whole thing. That was so much fun.
Hi, Cheryl. It's Judy. And I am wondering, do you have anything left on your bucket list? You've done so much. You've traveled so many places. You've gone to so many places on your own, and she's traveled all the way to Dallas just to see a Tom Jones show. And is there anything else on your bucket list?
Well, in 2017, I went to Ireland in honor of Chris, because that was somewhere he always wanted to go. So I did that, and I spent a beautiful 3 weeks there with a very good friend. He allowed me to stay in his home. But yes, I would love to go to England and Wales. That is on my bucket list. So yeah, I've still got stuff I want to do. And Springfield, that's on my current bucket list. And I cannot wait to meet you guys.
Well, it's 7:59. Well, it's 8:59 Eastern. Are there other questions that you would like to ask before we wrap this up?
Cheryl, it's Coconut. I just want to say how very interesting your life story was. I hope I get to meet you in Springfield if all goes well. Thanks again for the wonderful interview.
Thank you, Lindsay, and hugs to Gabe, too, and you, too. Thank you. I hope to meet you as well.
I have another question. And my question is, did you have any iPhone training? You're so swift and smart with an iPhone, and you now run an iPhone group and help so many others, including me. What kind of training did you have in an iPhone, and who trained you?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how that all came to be, I started out with an iPad. I paid all this money for this iPad, and I was like looking at it, and I was like, I had no idea what to do with it. I ended up listening to some podcasts that gave me some pointers, and then when I finally got my iPhone, Kay Baker was instrumental in helping me, and she was so patient with me in helping me with it. So it's basically you have to put the time and the effort into it to learn it. It's you know, but eventually I caught on. And how the iAccess group got started was when I met Chris, he was doing teleconferencing seminars and teaching people how to get online and the whole thing. So I basically started that type of group in his honor, to honor his memory with helping other people learn the iPhone.
Is this ongoing? Because I sure would like to get involved with it.
Well, I am going to start a beginning class. I just have to figure out my schedule to be a little more consistent, and it's probably going to be on a Wednesday on the same day that I do iAccess. I'll do a beginner class on VIP. We just have to work out the time, but I am going to do that.
Oh, that sounds great. Thanks a bunch for doing that.
Just wanted to make a comment, Cheryl. It's been great being your friend and getting to know you over the last 9 years that I've known you. But I couldn't help but think when you were talking about when you were first finding out about you had joined the blind club and you weren't quite sure where you were going to end up and you had quit school and you were sitting home. And I think we've all seen dark places in our lives. You know, to see where we all ended up today and to think of where we were at different times, you know, it's almost to, you don't know which direction to turn, what to grab onto and to hang on to. You're young, you're inexperienced, and it's a heck of a place to be in.
Well, I had a lot of God intervention in my life. His presence has always been with me, and I am so grateful for that.
Next month, I will have the opportunity to interview Bob the coffee drinker, and I don't remember his last name. He lives in Ohio. I look forward to that, and thanks everyone so much for coming tonight. And Cheryl, again, thanks so much.
Thanks for making this easy and seamless, Susie, and you made me feel very comfortable. Thank you for that.
Good night, everyone.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.